Eat, pray, love, and then what? How do you follow up a book that spent 57 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list? That is the enviable dilemma author Elizabeth Gilbert faced as she got back to writing after such a stunning success. Eat, Pray, Love was a memoir that told the story of her emotional and physical journey after a crushing divorce. So why not another memoir, a sequel? This one is about her reluctant entry into the world of matrimony for the second time. The title is Committed, A Skeptic Makes Peace with Marriage. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, very well. You got married to get a green card, essentially. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, at the end of my travels with Eat, Pray, Love, as readers of that book might remember, I fell in love with this lovely Brazilian gentleman, and we commenced to building a life together, and the only problem was that, you know, he wasn't a citizen of the United States, and we wanted to live here, and we were trying to get around that, but we had an unpleasant run-in with the Homeland Security Department at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, who essentially told us that we had no choice other than to get married if he wanted to be here. So it's sort of a shotgun wedding with the INS holding the other end of the shotgun.
Wow.
And the book is about my efforts to find a way to be comfortable with marriage after having been through such a bad divorce.
It's interesting. You were committed to him, but you weren't committed to the institution of marriage. What's the difference?
Right. Well, the difference is one of the things you learn when you go through a divorce is that promise that you make to each other on your wedding day is also extended into a contract that you enter into with the state. And when you try to disband a marriage and you have to wait for a couple of years to get permission from the state to be granted a divorce, you realize just how involved the government has become in your private life. And the fact that we didn't want to have children, and so we didn't feel we needed, you know, that legal sanction of marriage to protect the family, just made us feel like maybe we'd like to leave the government out of it. But unfortunately, you know, you can't have intimacy without privacy, and you can't have privacy without rights, and you can't have rights without some sort of state sanction. So we decided to go for it.
So how did you come to terms with this, you know, lack of privacy or whatever you gave up in order to make it possible for you to come back to the U.S.?
Well, what I did was we spent 10 months out of the country trying to get back in on a fiancé visa, and I used that time to do absolutely nothing but study and contemplate the subject of matrimony and talk to everybody that I met when we were traveling around the world, waiting to get back into the United States, and read every book that I could have my historian sister ship me back from Philadelphia. And for one thing, I got a huge historical perspective on the idea of marriage, and it changed a bit my notion of it, because what I thought of as a very rigid, box-shaped social structure that's been passed down intact for thousands of years is actually, when you look at it closely, this ever-evolving, liquid, long-term social science experiment that has been changing and altering with every generation in order to stay relevant. You know, the obvious example of that being that none of us would accept marriage on its 14th century terms, not even the most conservative commentators in the world, you know. And so marriage changes, and the people who change it are those who are within it. You know, it's almost like we're each given tools as we enter into that couplehood, and we shape it from within. And when I saw it in that perspective, I started to think, okay, I'm part of this long evolving historical process. I'm not being crammed into this narrow, rigid box.
Well, I love your perspective, Elizabeth, and I'm a big fan of your work. And, you know, people shouldn't think that even though you're so brilliant, you're not romantic. You're very, very romantic. But in your perspective here, you have a unique, you can answer this question, probably no one else in the world can. Which is worse, divorce or Homeland Security at Fort Worth Airport?
You know what, after that encounter with the Homeland Security at Fort Worth Airport, I remember right before they handcuffed my sweetheart and took him to jail and then deported him, he grabs me and he said, "I love you so much, I will even marry you." Because that's what it came down to in terms of romance. Like, oh,
boy, that's
I guess
true
we
love.
Have to do this,
yeah.
You know. So I guess the answer is Homeland Security's worse.
What's worse, though, for you as a writer, you wrote a lot of books before your success with Eat, Pray, Love that weren't as widely received, to say the least. You write in your book, interestingly, that when you wrote for a small audience, you said in one critical way, it was comforting. If I humiliated myself too atrociously, at least there wouldn't be many witnesses. And then you go on to say that you wrote this book with 27 women in mind. Was that the key, that you couldn't think about millions of people picking this book up?
Yeah, there is something intimidating about trying to write a book that will satisfy millions of people, especially if the books that you wrote before that were read by dozens and dozens of people. So I had to kind of go back to that smaller scale. So instead of writing committed for the whole world, I chose the 27 women in the world who are most important to me, my family, friends, relatives, and neighbors, who've all been having conversations about intimacy forever, and I wrote the book for them.
Elizabeth Gilbert, author of the New York Times bestseller Eat, Pray, Love, and maybe a new bestseller, Committed, A Skeptic Makes Peace with Marriage. Thanks for your time and good luck with the book.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.